Auto insurance can all seem the same until it comes time to use it. So don't get stuck paying more for less coverage. Switch to USAA Auto Insurance and you could start saving money in no time. Get a quote today. Restrictions apply.
Of radio.
Look, I'm not saying that nobody wants to hear a story from you. I'm just saying that people are going to care more about a story where I almost die because I have people that love me and you are a sad, lonely little man who just lives in an apartment all by himself. You would die and it would take days for your neighbors to even know that you were dead. They'd have to wait for your smell. That's so mean. I'm sorry, bud. I love you.
Welcome to Super Movie Brothers. Let's start the show.
Welcome to Super Movie Bros. I'm your host, Super Movie Brother Dave.
I'm your host, Super Movie Brother Jay.
All right, I said last time, I said it was going to be a short episode, and then I went and made that motherfucker 90 minutes.
Standard
practices and procedures for this show. However, this time, I do promise, short. Why?
Mark his words.
Not a whole lot going on. I think you and I have two movies to review. You're going to be reviewing Vacation Friends. I'll be reviewing Vacation Friends with you. And then I also watched Candyman, so I'll have a review for Candyman. And then I'm just going to give brief impressions. I finally caught up with some TV shows, so I'll just give some brief impressions
on
a TV show that I caught up on. Jay, anything else that you're going to be talking about in What Are You Watching?
Neil Jordan. He is an Irish director that's done a bunch of things, and I just kind of caught up with a couple of his movies, some Irish movies, Ondine and Breakfast on Pluto.
Okay, never heard of either of them, so that sounds like a Jay's indie.
It is
corner.
A double feature, I know. Director-focused indie corner.
A director-focused indie corner. So do I have to like do a fake synopsis for this director, or do I just pick one of the movies and make a fake synopsis
Think,
for those?
Irish Ridley Scott. You'll love it.
I don't know. So, heard some feedback on my Ridley Scott impression, which I've been doing since like this show started. Which it's like, first off, it's not an impression; it's just right. How he sounds in my head,
in your head, yeah.
And I've explained that he's, like so many times that like this is not what Ridley Scott sounds like. This is just in our head.
This is how we fantasize him to be,
right? Because me and Jay saw an interview with him once where he was being completely surly, as he literally had a scotch glass in his hand and cigar also. And
beautiful it was thing.
And like right. So to me and Jay, like automatically
we ran with it.
Yeah, we're just like, this is who this guy is at his core, right?
Yes.
In our head, that was always solidified. 100%. That's who Ridley Scott is. So I make him completely like Cockney in a terrible Cockney accent. And but anyway, the feedback was like, Dave, stop doing Ridley Scott. It's a terrible impression. It's like, but it's not an impression. This is like the imaginary friend Ridley Scott that
and
me
I
and
love
Jay,
it, so shut up.
Right? This is the imaginary friend Ridley Scott that me and Jay have, not the real Ridley Scott.
Like. And it's a nice little like, reoccurring joke that we always do, yeah. I feel like. I don't know. I think it works.
So all your feedback, it stays. I'm sorry. It stays. It's in. And then me and Dave got some news stories to run through with you. So without any further delay, Jay, let's get into this week's news. I'm still trying to figure out like this whole like soundboard thing that I'm doing. I obviously haven't like gotten it like, you know, all the way right yet. So if some things like don't sound quite right, it's because I'm doing them differently.
Tinkering.
I'm just tinkering.
Trying to make something a little bit more convenient so it cuts into the, you know, the editing time.
So essentially like me editing now is it's like Bill O'Reilly.
Okay. We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live. Fuck it.
that's pretty much how me and Jay are doing things these days.
Pretty much. We're doing it live now in person.
Right. And cutting.
It's
and,
a little rough around the edges, but
and,
it's working.
And cutting
we
down.
Like it better.
And just cutting down. Just cutting down on the amount of like audio that I have to like clip in to every episode. But Jay, we're here to talk about the news, so let's get into our first news story. RJ, we're not doing a full-on trailer park or anything like that for this, but a teaser trailer just dropped for Roland Emmerich's next film. We know this guy. He's really good at, like, disaster films, right?
Sure.
Independence Day, Day After Tomorrow, 2012, stuff like that.
Sure.
10,000 BC. Not sure if there was an apocalypse in that, but it was bad. That was just all around bad. But Roland Emmerich's back. He's here, and he's doing another movie that's a disaster movie. Jay, it's called Moonfall. Mm. Do you care to guess what it's about?
The moon falling.
The moon is falling. You don't need to write a fucking college dissertation to figure that one out.
A simpleton like Jay can actually figure this out.
It's about the moon falling. So Moonfall will star Halle Berry, me and Jay's.
Ooh.
Always. I think this is like the only guy that I think me and you would just double team ourselves. Like me and you.
I actually might be able to stay hard.
Yeah.
All right, guy.
For Patrick Wilson, who's also going to be in Moonfall. And then it has Michael Peña, Donald Sutherland. And then we just round out the cast with a bunch of faces that you'll recognize, but also don't know the name of. And I'm not going to sit here and read all them off. So
it's classic Emmerich style, you know.
Pretty much. Disaster happens. Heroes rise. Shit happens. February 4th, 2022. So I was like, wow. Well, I mean, we're not really hyping this movie at all, are we? Right? Because it's out in like 6 months and it's just like.
Yeah, but I mean, we don't see trailers too far in advance very often anymore. I mean, sometimes studios experiment with it, you know, with the bigger blockbusters sometimes.
For something that's not a property movie. And this isn't a property movie.
Right.
This is an IP, you know.
But this IP. This could have merit.
We'll see.
But again, it is what it is. It's a serviceable movie. It's all not right. An Oscar movie.
So Roland Emmerich, right? Number one movie, Independence Day, right? If you had to choose like another Roland Emmerich movie, you're like, I like that one. What would it be?
I got to look at his filmography, but I think Day After Tomorrow is always a strong candidate. But, you know.
Not the 1998 Godzilla? He was only a writer.
No.
He was only a writer on that one. So don't worry about that too much. But yeah, man, I'm just like, you know, I look at his filmography and I was just like, all right. I mean, he did like Midway and stuff like that. But I think the day after tomorrow, that's the one where I'm like, I don't hate it.
That's what I'm saying. I think, you know, maybe The Patriot, you know, a little nostalgic trip for me because
he's an executive producer on that.
No, I think he directed it.
No way.
You did.
He was the director of The Patriot?
Yeah.
Well, then that's my answer.
I think so.
I
love that movie, too.
I fucking love that movie.
Because that was also right when I first started watching movies.
Yeah.
And
I mean, not how America won the war or anything like that. Nothing in that movie is historically accurate.
Mel Gibson and Heath Ledger.
With the exception of them like going to Charlestown. Other than that, like everything else.
Charlestown.
Charlestown, the way they say it. Charlestown. We're going to Charlestown. Like, it's Charleston, you little fuck. Jesus Christ. Say it right. I guess they just enunciated everything back then. But anyway, Roland Emmerich, new movie coming out. This was far longer than it needed to be. Next news story. I said things were going to be quick. I said they were, and I'm just fucking lying now. I'm fucking lying. All right, Jay. Venom, Let There Be Carnage. First off, we did a news story where it was potentially delayed. Sony said, no. It's coming out on time. Not only will it be coming out on time, Sony actually moved its release date up by 2 weeks. It's going to be coming out on October 1st now.
Mm.
That's a rumor. And now the MPAA has released the rating for Venom, Let There Be Carnage. Remember when we did a trailer park and I was like, this has got to be rated R. It looks like it's going to be rated R. I even said that there's a moment where Carnage like picks up a guard and shoves his tongue down his throat. And
I thought the director even said it was rated R. Right,
and sucks his liquid insides out. And I was just like, that's pretty R-rated. We're getting there. It's not a Red Band trailer, but we're getting there. I think it's going to be R-rated. MPAA just said, no.
I also
PG-13.
I also think test screenings perhaps played a part of this as well, as far as, you know, the playability of it all.
Fuck a duck. Dude, this is a movie that is about two psychopathic murdering.
But it's also a billion-dollar movie, too.
Symbiotes. That all they,
I know you're not, you don't have to sell me. I want rated R.
All they do is consume, kill, reproduce, and make quips with the main character. I guess. I mean, that's what Venom does, but it's not what we want. But it's what he's gonna do anyway. And like, that's all they do. Violence is like in their name. Venom's an anti-hero.
Mm-hmm.
So like,
Are we going to do a Punisher movie that's PG-13? Oh, did we do that already? A Punisher movie that's PG-13? No, because they made them rated R. Even Thomas Jane Punisher was rated R.
Suicide Squad.
Rated R.
Fix that.
If it makes sense for it to be rated R, make it rated R.
Because like, that's what works.
Give your property the respect it deserves. I'm not saying I want to cut out like a bunch of the market for going to see this, but if Venom comes out, hey, and I'm a teenage kid, I'm taking my teenage kid to see
An R-House Joker movie rated R made $1 billion.
I know.
Anything has a chance. Just come saying. On. Come on.
You fucked up, Sony. You let them do this to you. You fucked up. Next news story. RJ, I'm in love with this one because what is one of my favorite movies from the 90s, and I wish that this character, we could team them up with Captain America and Indiana Jones, and we could tell awesome World War II stories about these three characters punching Nazis.
Freddy got fingered.
The Rocketeer. The Rocketeer. So I love The Rocketeer. It's a very cheesy early 90s movie that from Disney. It's about Alan Arkin, who makes like a jetpack, and then he gives it to some, you know, young punk kid.
Naturally.
Who then becomes The Rocketeer, sort of like a pseudo-superhero. He and the mob help fight off the Nazis from invading Hollywood.
Mm.
Yeah, with Timothy Dalton's Errol Flynn as character.
Oh.
It's a good movie. Have you seen this movie?
No.
You've never seen The Rocketeer?
No.
Get the fuck out.
No.
You're fired. And in case your ears are fucked, get the fuck out.
I won't stand for it. I won't stand for it. I have The Rocketeer on DVD, and I think you should take it. It's also on Disney Plus. So.
Bearded Brothers.
No, they've never seen this. Maybe Cody has seen this.
See, Cody, dust off your mic.
Maybe Cody.
You're subbing in.
Maybe Cody has
next
seen this.
Next week.
But anyway, the point of the story is, as much as I would love to see the Rocketeer team up with Indiana Jones and Captain America to punch Nazis in the face, I thought that would never happen because the Rocketeer is not around anymore.
Mm.
Lo and behold, The Return of the Rocketeer is a movie that is in the works at Disney Plus.
Original cast?
I don't know, but we're one step closer, Jay. isn't Alan Arkin dead? Who knows? But anyway.
Well.
This is why we need a producer. We need a producer. So when I say, is Alan Arkin dead? I can look behind me to my producer and he goes, yeah, Alan Arkin's dead. And I'll be like, thank you, producer. We had a producer for one episode.
I know. I feel like he's either, I don't know, shit. I think he's alive. Yeah, I think he's alive.
All right. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know who's going to be in it. They literally just announced that it's going to be here. That it's coming to Disney Plus. It's not going to theaters. It's a Disney Plus original movie. They'll probably slap it on a fucking 16-year-old kid from the Disney Channel and just be like, girls love this kid. Let's make some money off of him.
Yeah. Go get him.
But the point is, we're one step closer to my dream of having Captain America, Indiana Jones, and a Rocketeer punching Nazis together.
I could do this all day.
Next news story. All right, so this is kind of a big one, Jay. Netflix, we've been talking about how they've been using all their money and their influence and their power, and it just continues to grow and grow in Hollywood. And they've now just picked up a pretty big horror franchise. They have now picked up the rights to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre horror franchise. And I'm actually excited about this. Because I think Netflix will breathe some new blood into it, right? Like, we had Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake, and then we had The Beginning, and I think we had, like, another one called Leatherface. Like, I can't remember how many remakes or whatever we've done since the original. The first two are fantastic.
Sure.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre from I think it was 1976, and then Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, both directed by Tobe Hooper. Absolutely awesome. Two completely different movies, but both absolutely fantastic. And everything else we've gotten since then, dog shit.
Well, okay, so first, couple things. One, most recently, I think a week or two ago, one of the executives of Netflix agreed that they have been producing subpar content, or they should be producing better content than they have been, which has been always a thing. We all are aware of that.
Well, I think.
I think
once the platform got up and running and got as big as it was, it became we need to hit people with new content.
It was a bit of a shit show.
All the time.
They were trying to produce, and it got mishandled and mismanaged in some of the stuff. A good chunk of the stuff really.
I would take, like, right now, you can go on Netflix on every Friday, and there's like three or four new releases that are like Netflix originals, quote unquote, meaning they acquired them and stuff like that. And most of them aren't worth your time to watch, or they're bad, but or they're foreign, and I'm not really interested in the subject matter.
Yeah, so they either produce them themselves from scratch, or they acquired them and they bought the rights.
Right.
So
but either way, but most of it is like you have your tentpole things that Netflix puts out that you're really excited.
But my point is, they're trying to right the wrongs, you know. So this is one of those options that they acquired that could really breathe interesting new light into this world.
I would also say like Fear Street is a step in that right direction, right? Because it deals with teenagers, like Stranger Things. It's on its way out. They need to continue to hit that market.
Yeah, but I also think that they need to also do a better job with their large films. Like Red Notice, big budget movie. We'll be talking about that soon, right? And then, you know,
well, we're not doing a trailer park breakdown, but there was a trailer for Red Notice. The reason we're not doing a trailer park breakdown for it is because
we're both meh. Yeah.
We said meh. M-E-H. Meh.
It's meh.
It is.
And it's
like a mix of Six Underground and Hobbs and Shaw, right?
It looks meh.
Just like that.
But it'll be
with
free.
With fancier clothes.
It'll be free. It'll come out on a Friday. Me and you will sit at home and have
a 100%. I'll still enjoy watching it,
yeah,
for sure.
We'll watch it.
My point is, you can tell, like, I don't know. Now I'm kind of curious about the Russo brothers, The Gray Man. I mean, this is supposed to be the most expensive, you know, Netflix big movie tentpole. And it's supposed to be a franchise thing, like a big deal, like rivalry with Bond, you know, S type thing. So I don't know.
Almost like the tentpole you have in your pants for Patrick Wilson.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm talking about Gosling right now, so I'm like,
so hopefully we'll hear some more announcements from Netflix that are in the vein of this, where they're getting some big franchises and they're gonna either revive them or do something with them. I look forward to seeing what Netflix does with Texas Chainsaw Massacre, because I kinda hope they bring it back to like what the original feel
the
was
roots.
Of it.
Yes.
Exactly. Next news story. RJ, more delays. And this isn't surprising, but it seems that Paramount has delayed Mission Impossible and Top Gun Maverick. Both movies are being moved to 2022 now.
The year of Tom Cruise.
The year of Tom Cruise.
It's going to be a great year.
Right.
Because I guarantee you both movies are going to be awesome.
What'd you call it? The Thomasance, right?
The Thomasons.
The Thomasons. Right. The Renaissance of Tom Cruise.
I can't wait.
If we can get a live, die, repeat, you know, in 2022, can we like get that going and just bring Tom Cruise in for that? These other two movies, they're filmed. He's done working on. Well, not Mission Impossible. He's a producer on it, so he probably has some.
They were trying to originally shoot back to back for the next one. But that got held up because of COVID, obviously. But
yeah.
I'm excited, man. I really am. I love Tom Cruise. You know, Top Gun looked great, the trailer.
But are you okay with everything moving to 2022? I am, for the most part.
I'm disappointed, but I get it. I understand it.
Yeah.
They're 100% theater movies. They can't sacrifice anything. And I guess...
Well, for Paramount, whatever goes into theater 45 days later, it's on Paramount Plus. I don't know how long they're going to continue doing that.
But not many people have Paramount Plus. I don't.
No, I canceled it. I had it and I canceled it. Because I was like, all right, I've watched everything Star Trek related that I want to watch. I'm not a big Star Trek fan still.
And
sorry, I tried.
Did you watch Yellowstone? That's like their big hit.
No, my dad watches Yellowstone.
that's the only thing I ever hear about.
That's a boomer show, bro.
It is. It's like a USA show, I feel like.
It's not, though. It's Paramount, so I think it's on Paramount.
No, I know, but it
Paramount
reminds
Network.
Me of like a USA show for some reason.
Yeah. I mean, no, it's got good quality. It's got Katie Sackhoff, stuff like that. Like, people like it. I get why people like it. But no, man, that's a boomer show. It's got Kevin Costner in it, doesn't it? Nothing says...
It does.
Nothing says boomer culture more than Kevin Costner.
Like Montana, something like that. You know, on the ranch.
Jay, Yellowstone is in Montana. You're aware of this, right?
Oh, thanks.
Geography. Learn it.
Well, man. It's overrated. I'm over the hump on
me that. And Lauren were just several miles from Yellowstone when we took our trip.
That's
out
what smartphones are for now.
When we took a trip out to LA, we were supposed to have a layover in Chicago, and they were like, oh, we can't land in Chicago, so we're gonna land you in Bozeman, Montana.
Ooh.
And me and Lauren were like, where the fuck is Bozeman, Montana? Come to find out, it's right near Yellowstone. Gorgeous place, by the way. Like,
you were actually able to explore?
No, I mean, we were in the terminal. But
you saw the windows and,
right.
and the
so
fields.
Big,
you know,
sprawling.
The forest.
No, just gorgeous mountain ranges, like as far as the eye can see.
Okay,
even
okay,
as
okay.
we're landing and stuff like that. And then we landed this airport that is made of wood.
What?
And only has 6 terminals.
Holy shit, that's awesome.
And it was closed.
That is so awesome.
Because apparently that airport isn't open all year round. Like, it'll take planes in, but like...
Was it like an emergency gas stop? Or
I don't know. No, I have no clue. We may have almost died. It may have been another time that I almost died.
That's amazing.
But But there was one like corner store open in there. Like it was very much like a convenience store. Like you could pick up magazines that were 3 to 6 months old, and they had beer in a fridge, in like a very tiny fridge next to it. So, and one of it, the beer I drank the whole time that I was sitting there, because we had a layover for like five or six hours. That's that wasn't amazing. Supposed to be. I drank a beer called Moose Drool.
Moose Drool of all things.
5 or 6 hours. Me and Lauren just drank beer, got in the plane, and then it was like 2.5 hours.
Was it a sour beer?
No, it was not. It was not. But I've been to Bozeman, Montana, Jay. So, I've been to Yellowstone.
There you go.
What's funny is my dad watches Yellowstone, and it's like his dream to go to Yellowstone. So.
Of course it is. They probably shoot it gorgeously.
It's right. Every boomer's dream. Next news story. RJ, Ghostbusters Afterlife. I'm sorry. I said before that Paramount was the producer of Top Gun. They didn't make Top Gun. Sony did. That's a Sony picture. So Sony has...
It's co.
So Sony has moved Ghostbusters into the Top Gun spot. So Top Gun is now going to 2022.
Yep.
Ghostbusters Afterlife, October 15th, 2021.
Bring it on, baby.
We're so close.
So close. Honestly, it's going to be here before you know it.
Jay, 3 years. You remember that trailer that they dropped for it like 3 years ago? Where it was literally just like...
But it doesn't feel 3 years ago. It was more like 2 years ago.
It was like a stormy background and like the barn door blows open.
Such a good teaser.
And there's a tarp and it blows up and you just see the
little hint.
You just see the logo. Symbol. And that's it. And I was just like, that was 3 years ago.
Yeah.
I've been waiting for this movie.
I've never seen Dave's dick that hard, ever.
No, the day I got my proton pack in the mail was the day. It was probably the hardest my dick's ever been.
Why worry? Each of us is wearing an unlicensed nuclear accelerator on his back.
I'd apologize to my wife, but I think she gets it.
Yeah.
So that's going to do it for our news this week. Like I said, short episode. Jay, let's get into what are you watching?
What are you watching?
What are we watching?
He's trying to watch some illegal channel.
Are we watching?
No, go past this part. In fact, never play this again.
All right, Jay, I'm going to kick things off real quick. So I caught up on a TV show that me and Lauren used to watch religiously, and then we got rid of Showtime because we realized it was kind of like the only thing we were watching on Showtime. So like, why have Showtime anymore?
I don't know.
I caught up on Shameless. So final season.
Wait for it on Netflix.
Yeah. Season 11 came out. So I was like, all right, time to catch up on it. So, we got a hold of someone else's account.
It's such an end of a improbable show, you know, it's such a great era.
So that's what amazes me. So like when this show started, first off,
this show should not have worked.
It was pretty groundbreaking when the show started. Now,
well, yeah.
When I say groundbreaking, I understand that there's a British version that ran just as long and stuff like that, and it's based on that. However, I think for an American audience, this show shouldn't have worked, but it did, and I fell in love with a lot of the characters. Now, I know we've talked about this series in the past, and like I said, kind of like when Fiona left, I was like, I'm kind of done with it. And I really was. I kind of missed the past two seasons.
Yeah.
And I just, in a blitz, caught up with them. And I was like, so we just watched 24 episodes
of the show. It's a bingeable show.
It is.
But it's also fatiguing because it's so ADHD. There's so much going on.
So it's weird because every season always starts off with storylines that you think is going to be like a through line throughout the entire season. But then 3 episodes later, that storyline is either dropped or solved. Mm. And then another storyline arises and stuff like that.
Right.
And I thought this season, because it was the last one, maybe they were going to give us more of a through line. They did with one character, with Frank. And I don't want to spoil it for people, but Frank Gallagher...
Which makes sense, I guess.
Frank Gallagher has something that happens early on in the season that kind of becomes defining for him throughout the whole rest of this season. But anyway, I still enjoyed it. I think I liked where all the characters ended up. You know, I think it felt pretty final.
And it felt fitting too, right?
For the most part.
Okay.
For the most part.
Because I'm definitely going to catch up. I don't want to hear anything. You haven't told me anything. Which is good.
So it's not... I'm not going to say it's a great ending, but it's an ending.
Yeah, but...
And there's satisfying things about it.
At this point, that's all you can ask for.
Right.
For shows, especially for these long-running shows that people love.
Especially when you get, like, Game of Thrones ending the way it did.
Well,
like, you get people like... I think this is just, like, it's not a perfect ending, but it's an ending, and...
But it's not a bad ending.
It doesn't hurt. Right. It doesn't hurt. I was like, all right, I mean, this show has definitely declined in quality of writing and stuff like that. However, there's still a lot of charming aspects to it. But I did find myself throughout this season just not liking a lot of the characters anymore. And I was just like, I especially don't like Debbie. I don't really like Lip, who used to be a character I really identified with.
Right.
Being too smart for your own good. And
I've never liked Debbie, though.
And getting yourself into trouble and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, man, that's like your Lip is literally my entire life. Like, I don't want to, I'm not saying like I'm not super smart, like genius, like Lip or anything like that, but definitely too smart for my own good a lot of the times in my life. So, and then I think I found myself in later seasons really gravitating towards, especially the past two seasons, Ian and Mickey, the gay characters. Those are the two where I'm like, I get it. I get you guys.
Huh.
You're trying to navigate like, later life, your late 20s, well, your mid 20s,
at least
like that.
Ian for sure
together.
They've done. I didn't know he was back in the picture. Okay, yeah. So yeah, I mean, I do respect a lot of what Ian went through. They really pushed his character far, throughout this whole series,
giving him bipolar disorder and stuff like
they
that.
Treaded making, in that
making
quite
him,
a bit,
making him gay in the South Side of Chicago. And, but then, like this whole season, really wraps up the whole gentrification thing, which has been going on for three seasons in the show now. It's the third season with it. But I was satisfied with it. I think if you're someone who hasn't been watching Shameless, I don't think it hurts to go back and just finish the series out. However, I'm not going to tell you like you need to go back and finish the series out. Like,
I think everybody will at some point. You know, if you were a fan of the show, a lot of people were in and out, dipping in.
But I think you're right. I could have waited for Netflix. I definitely could have waited for Netflix instead of.
I'm certainly going to. Right. I'm not in any rush.
Instead of getting Showtime and stuff like that again.
Yeah, I lost that urgency a long time ago with that show.
All right, Jay, what else? What did you get out of watching this week?
Well, like I kind of teased earlier, I caught up with a couple old indie little Irish films directed by Neil Jordan. And, you know, he's kind of a prominent filmmaker. He's done some things like Greta last year, The Borgias, that TV show long running on Showtime, The Brave One with Jodie Foster, Interview with the Vampire. I think that was one of his big ones, The Crying Game back in the day. So he's had some success. He doesn't do too many movies.
Right.
But these are charming. And very original. So let's get into Jay's Indie Corner.
Well, no. Let's get into the names first so I can get them before I give a fake synopsis.
Undine. O-N-D-I-N-E.
Okay. I don't even know what that is, so I can't even make a fucking thing.
And Breakfast on Pluto.
Now, Jay. Now you may go pour yourself a bourbon neat. You can wear your ironic sunglasses. You can wear your ironic glasses. You can curl your mustache just right. And we can get ourselves into Jay's Indie Corner. All right, Jay. So, I'll focus on the one that I actually understand words in. I don't know what Undine is, but
it's a name.
It sounds like poutine.
Undine.
It sounds like poutine.
Undine.
It sounds like poutine.
Protein for my poutine.
Protein for my poutine poontang. But no, so I'll do a fake synopsis for Breakfast on Pluto. Which is obviously a sci-fi film, right? Like, I mean, it's about
certainly has a name for it.
It's about two star-crossed lovers who are stuck on a wayward spaceship that no longer has a working navigation system, and they are essentially just floating through the Milky Way galaxy, aimless, directionless, lost. There's no hope. No one's coming for them, and it's just how their relationship builds and grows and stuff like that. They eventually, you know, get together. They have children, and then, like, you know, where they're trying to figure out about their life when they're middle aged and they no longer get each other, even though they are the only two people that they can talk to on this fucking spaceship that's wandering aimlessly through the Milky Way galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
They're just eating breakfast with Pluto right off outside, and they're just like, you know what? what was life all about? Life was about breakfast on Pluto. And then she goes, shut the fuck up. That makes no fucking sense. I fucking hate you. I can't. If we could get a divorce, I would. Sleep with one eye open, motherfucker, because I'm going to fucking cut your throat. You say one more fucking stupid fucking thing like,
damn,
life is about breakfast on Pluto. Go fuck yourself.
Go suck an egg.
Go suck an egg. Callbacks. But that's like, so you see what breakfast is like between me and my wife now. Kidding. Kidding. I love my wife. No. I'm just saying, you know, I love movies where like two people like get together and then they have like a divide, something that like divides them. And then like they both like come to the realization and they both come back together and it's like, oh, that's wonderful. That's beautiful. You know, that rarely ever happens. Like most people in relationships when they split, there's always that one person that's like, I could do this again, and the other person's like, fuck no, get the fuck away from me.
You're right. No, it's usually lopsided.
It's usually lopsided. So I want to see a story of people falling in love, then falling out of love with one person. And it's usually the guy that I feel like wants to fall back in love with that person. Mainly they're not getting ass, and they like regular ass. So so I want to see a story that's about two star-crossed lovers in space falling in love, falling out of love, and then just arguing with the fucking meteorite, you know, planetoid that is Pluto just off in the distance. And that's what it's about. They're just fucking arguing with each other.
Not quite.
Okay.
But the title is actually based from a song by Don Partridge. And, you know, this is based from a book that is also named Breakfast on Pluto. This movie came out in 2005. It stars Cillian Murphy.
It wasn't a Brent Easton Ellis novel by any chance, was it?
Uh-oh,
I asked Jay a follow-up question.
Pat McCabe.
Okay, all right, just making sure. Oh, it just sounds
quick
like
with my fingers right now.
it just kind of sounds like a Brent Easton Ellis title, doesn't it?
I don't know.
Less
I don't
than Zero, books, Breakfast obviously. On Pluto.
That is true, though. You're you right. You're 100% right on that.
Right.
And this is, you know, this story is based in the 70s in Ireland, and it's a coming-of-age story through and through. Cillian Murphy is the lead playing a trans woman. You'd see right from the get-go.
Oh shit, I've actually heard of this movie.
It's a challenge. He was abandoned at a church.
All right, I actually heard
grew
this
up
movie.
In a foster home. Was always this way. You know, you can kind of see it as coming of age.
Can I just say something? At the age of 35, you at the age of 37 now. Don't you hate coming of age stories? Like, don't you look at them and just be like, oh, look at you, you fucking little Gen Zer piece of shit. Your whole fucking life is ahead of you. Meanwhile, you know, the millennials and stuff like that, we're trying to make the world a better place, but it was left in fucking tatters by the boomers. And we're making it worse by overcompensating. And you guys will just get to pick through the fucking ashes.
My only annoyance with this, I got two annoyances with this movie. One, it's a little bit long.
Okay.
And two, it's told the most heavily chaptered film I've ever seen in my life.
Okay. Literally like the book. Like they're just like.
Kind of.
Chapter one
like,
in the book.
There's like a lot of chapters in this fucking movie.
Gotcha.
More than I ever recall another movie doing. But.
Yeah, most Quentin Tarantino movies are like four chapters.
Yeah, well, there's like 13 or 14 or something.
My God.
Anyway, it's kind of told in a very interesting way because this filmmaker, Neil Jordan, does a really good job of hooking you into the movie realistically so you're invested. And then he starts to throw these little curveballs, those like fantastical things happening into the movie. And it kind of happens and you kind of roll with it. You know, it kind of works. It's not over the top too much. But, you know, it's kind of exhausting because it's a traumatizing story. It's not an easy story to watch, and he goes through the ringer, and you know it gets kind of heavy.
Okay.
As he gets older and he navigates through London trying to find his birth mother and this and that, and living as he is a trans woman in the 70s, that's a big fucking deal.
Yeah, well, yeah, for sure.
It's a unique experience. So you see a lot of the ups and downs.
I mean,
with Ms.
Divine did it.
Yeah, yeah.
Pink
but it's definitely
Waters.
It's
on.
Definitely a worthy watch, and you can see that I'm not 100% sure, but this probably put Cillian Murphy on, you know, on the big list.
Okay,
for
all
studios.
Right, fair enough. You had the other one, Undine. Did you want to talk about
Undine? So this one came out 4 years later in 2009, and this is a whimsical little fantasy story starring Colin Farrell Our boy Colin Farrell. And he's an Irish fisherman, and he discovers this woman in his net one day. And it, and again, this filmmaker wraps you into reality, so you don't know.
Splash?
So you don't know if this is like an actual like mermaid thing or is an actual person.
Splash.
So you're conflicted throughout the whole movie with like that whole element of it all, you know, or they use Selkie, you know.
Right, not mermaid. Like an Irish legend.
Exactly. So it plays in that trope.
Jay, I wish I knew that this before, because I could definitely do a fake synopsis about fucking a mermaid. If you want to see a fake synopsis about fucking a mermaid, just watch The Lighthouse. My God, they made...
In all its glory.
They made fish parts look very sensual in that movie. It was very gross. Ooh, so gross.
So moist.
Watch. Ugh. See,
but all that salt water, that's some rough shaping.
Seagulls,
that's
fucking,
no lube.
Seagulls
that's no
are
lube.
Just chasing after your dick when you're done.
Oh, my God.
Pick out mine. Mine. And it's like, no. Like the seagull's trying to eat your dick after you fucked a mermaid because it's so fishy.
Little bit at a time. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I'm going to have nightmares tonight, motherfucker.
Never fuck a mermaid, kids. I hope it's in black and white, much like The Lighthouse was.
Yeah, you do have this nightmare. Exactly. And, you know, it's a charming movie. You know, this movie, I think, ultimately has so much poor audio quality is what drove me nuts. And I don't know if it's because it's like a small movie and they shot alive on water and on the coast of Ireland, and it was and their heavy dialogue and accents and all that stuff is like a little jarring. So I missed a lot of dialogue, I feel like. So that was my main drawback from it, for the whole experience. But the daughter is phenomenal, and it's so bad because this girl, Alison Barry, this is all she did pretty much. I think she did one other thing maybe, but she just, I guess, left the filmmaking world. But she was probably in the 9-year-old range, you know, when she did this movie.
Oh, my God.
And I don't think she's ever done anything since. It was like a kind of like a one-hit thing for her, but she was fantastic.
Leave it to you to sit here and say that a 9-year-old girl was fantastic. Everything. Think about what you say. Everything you say when you talk about children makes you sound like a pedophile.
It's a charming little movie. You know, if you want to seek it out, go seek it out. But by no means is it worth necessarily to go out and seek and watch.
Ken, I grew up in Dublin. I love Dublin. If I'd grown up on a farm and was retarded, Bruges might impress me. But I didn't, so it doesn't.
Favorite Colin Farrell line. So since you said his name, I had to say it.
Of course.
Grew up in Dublin. I love Dublin.
Dublin.
All right, Jay, moving on. I'm going to get into one of my main reviews this week. I got out there and I saw Candyman.
And the legend is, if you say Candyman 5 times while looking in the mirror,
who can take a sunrise, sprinkle it with dew, cover it in chocolate and a miracle or two?
Appears in the reflection and kills you.
I heard you're looking for Candyman.
Candyman!
So I watched Candyman, and like, Jordan Peele's name is all over this shit. Like, you know, I understand he's a producer on it, and he's one of four writers, Jay. So it was written by him, Wynn Rosenfeld, Nia Costa, Clive Barker, who the story is based off of, and Bernard Rose, who wrote the script of the original Candyman with Clive Barker. But really, it was written by him and Nia Costa. Nia DaCosta is also the director of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it is both a sequel and a spiritual successor
sure.
to the 1992.
That's
Candyman.
Fair. That's what I've heard.
It's not quite a sequel because it never outright references too much from that movie as far as events go. However, it does pay homage to them and even shows the picture of the main character of the main character, the final girl from the first one, and kind of goes through in the same geographical area. However, it's tackling all new issues this time.
mainly gentrification of neighborhoods and stuff like that. And it follows, I always say his name wrong, so Yahya Abdul Mateen II.
It's close.
It's close. I don't know how to
it's
say
close.
It. So from here on out, I will be referring to him as Abdul Mateen. I get both of those.
Not bad.
And he plays Anthony McCoy, who is an artist who grew up on the south side of Chicago, which is currently going through gentrification. Funny that I watched this movie right after finishing Shameless, which is also a show that's very much about the same exact type of thing. So he's an artist who lives with his art gallery owning partner, played by Tayona Paris. And there he kind of starts getting into his art and stuff like that. And he learns about the legend of Candyman from a neighbor that used to live in the same development that the Candyman legend was in the original one, played by Coleman Domingo. And from there, he starts making art based on the Candyman stories that he hears. And what happens as a result of him making the art, he breathes new life into the legend. And now new people are staring into a mirror, Jay, and they're saying, Candyman. Candyman.
Don't.
Candyman.
No.
Candyman. Beetlejuice.
It's showtime.
Anyway. So, look, man, I really enjoyed like a lot of the heavy material that this movie started throwing at my feet, right? Like Abdul Mateen's character is talking about, like, you know, saving the ghetto and the life that it breathes into the city, and the city lives inside him and stuff like that. But one of the things I found interesting was here he is living on the condos that now exist in the same exact geographical location that the Cabrini Greens used to exist from the original one, which was very much, you know, a ghetto area and stuff like that. He talks about preserving the ghetto, preserving the art, preserving the culture and stuff like that. Yet he is very much a part of the gentrification of the exact area that he's trying to preserve. Granted, he's not rich. It's kind of like his girlfriend's rich and stuff like that. But there is a duality there to that.
Mm-hmm.
Also the fact that you're like an artist and it's not exactly, you know, the people that you're trying to raise awareness for, you know, coming in and looking at your art. It's the rich white people that are coming in and looking at your art. You know what I mean?
So, every artist needs a rich person.
It's true. So it hits me with like these heavy ideals and it hits me with like some of this stuff that's like, you know, it's truly polarizing for the main character. And it's like, this is actually extremely interesting. I want the horror elements to come. Don't get me wrong. And they will. It might take 40 minutes into the movie for them to come. But they do. But what happens is once the horror elements start coming in, all those heavy things that we were dealing with up front, all those like great like little nuance,
gone,
like,
right?
They kind of start to fade away.
And then it turns into just a different kind of film?
A bit. They try to bring it back at the end with that. Like they try to bring it back in and create like a whole story with it and try to make it more cohesive. But really the ending was, it almost just felt like we've been here for 90 minutes, right? Time for an end. Don't you think?
Time, yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
I'm trying not to spoil this for anybody because I do recommend it, but this is not like a movie theater.
It's not a hard recommend.
This is not a movie theater recommend.
It's like see it when you see it, but don't go out of your way to see it.
And I'll be honest, my memory of watching the original Candyman in 1992, like I didn't watch it in 1992. First off, I was 6 years old, so I wouldn't be watching that. But I did watch it sometime in like my late tweens, early teens. I saw that movie, and I'll be honest, after reading, you know, going back and reading the synopsis for the original Candyman, because I don't remember much about it, I was like, there's no way I was picking up everything that Candyman in 1992 was putting down. And I think I should rewatch that. I probably should have rewatched that before watching this. I just didn't have the time. But yeah, as far as this movie goes, I'm giving it a B-, right? Like, I think it's enjoyable. I think it's good. I think it's got some great horror elements. But God damn it, if you're going to kill some teenagers in a fucking bathroom, Jay, I need to see some fucking teenagers getting killed in a fucking bathroom. Don't move the camera. Don't shy away from it. Don't just show blood falling from the fucking falling from where supposed teenager is being slaughtered. Show me
the death,
the slaughter. I want to see the death. That's horror. It doesn't shy away from the blood. doesn't quite show all the death, though. But it does have some truly gruesome scenes, and it does have a very unnerving atmosphere to it, I think. I think it nailed atmosphere for this story 100%. So I enjoy it for all that stuff, but yeah, I really think it kind of betrayed itself a little bit towards the end. I don't want to say betrayed itself. I think that sounds too harsh. I think
do you think this guy butchered in the editing room or by the studio or whatever?
I think 90 minutes is awfully short.
That's a red flag for a studio butchering it, or yeah, essentially that's what it is. Editing got compromised and they lopped it off to make it as playable as possible, even still being rated R, but to keep it taut.
I think of another movie that I saw earlier this year that I highly recommend to people, the Netflix one, His House. Remember, it was about the people who were from the war torn African country.
Yeah, I remember you talking about it. Sure.
England and stuff like that. I think a lot of the ideals and stuff that were put down in that is also kind of put down in here and stuff like that. However, I think His House was far more effective. It didn't get away from the heavy political context that it was putting down.
Right.
I think Candyman kind of did a little bit. Similar atmospheres, though. When this comes out and is available streaming somewhere, watch it as soon as you possibly can.
Okay.
Because I think it's good. I just don't think it's worth risking COVID and all that stuff to go to the theaters to see. It's a B-minus movie. It's good. It's good. It's getting good reviews, too. It's just when I watched that, I was like, man, it's just not fucking hitting me. You know what I mean? It's just not hitting me. Early on, I was very interested. Edge of my seat, listening to everything, all these political discussions that these smart, young hipsters in a gentrified area are having. And I was like, yeah, I'm one of you left wingers. I get it. I get what we're talking about.
You would have liked to have seen it in a different movie.
No, I think I would have liked to have
not a horror movie.
I think I would have liked to have seen it blend its horror elements and its
better
satire a little bit more.
Okay.
So you think
this was mishandled by the director a little bit?
No.
Okay.
No, I think you're right. I think this got butchered in an editing room.
Yeah,
I don't blame the director at all. I think, especially.
Well, she doesn't have the power.
Yeah, especially when I tell you that the.
I'm assuming
that
it's a girl. I don't know why I thought it was a girl. It was a girl, though, right?
It's a female.
Yeah, it is a female. It's okay, a woman. I thought so. Yeah. Again, like I said, she doesn't have power yet.
But Jordan Peele does. Jordan Peele does.
And Jordan Peele probably gave the okay to do it.
It might have, but when I watched this movie, I was just like, man, I really wish we blended those ideas from the earlier on in the script with the horror elements later on in the script. And like I said, when it does, it's almost
the
like,
marketing was strong.
Oh,
the
marketing
thought,
was great. I think by the time it gets to the end,
it almost got me to the theater and watch it.
It's too little, too late. By the time we bring it all home and we only have 15 minutes left in the movie, I'm like, it's just too little, too late. It also does an interesting thing where we know the original story of Candyman, right? He's the son of a rich former slave who created a machine that was able to mass produce shoes and stuff like that. And he impregnates a white woman, obviously in a time where that was extremely frowned upon. He's essentially lynched and killed and stuff like that. Hence why he haunts people. This time they kind of give you multiple possible origins for the Candyman, and they kind of get into that. That is part of the story. That maybe there's multiple Candymen, maybe there's multiple stories, maybe one's true, maybe they're all true. I do like that aspect of it as well. So, I think when this comes, probably I want to say, I guess it'll come to Netflix first. I don't know whether it'll come to Netflix, Amazon Prime, probably HBO Max. It'll probably be HBO.
What studio?
I don't remember.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember. But it'll probably come to HBO first, is my guess.
It depends on the studio.
Yeah. But when it is streaming, check it out. All right, Jay, let's get into our final review, man. You and I, we both watched last week. We had nothing to do during the weekend. And this little John Cena movie starring Little Ray Howery came out. And I was like, oh, man, this movie looks garbage. Vacation friends.
You're right. No more phones for the rest of this vacation.
Maybe look at those two.
What, these lunatics?
They look like they're having fun. We should try that.
Baby, I love you so much.
Well, I like the side of that.
We do too.
Jesus. Why does the salt not taste salty?
Because it's cocaine.
What?
Yeah!
Look, that bird is on us.
Mind open.
So I'll be honest, Vacation Friends looked like hot garbage when I saw it. I was like, this is just a, I can't even call it a cash grab, because this was meant to be released in theaters and then eventually just became a Hulu original. I guess, you know, it was purchased by them.
I think it's one of those COVID situation things.
I think so. I think so. But like, I do love Little Rel Howery. Like, I like the characters that he plays. He always plays like a very similar, same type character.
Normally.
And one of the things that stuck out to me about Vacation Friends is he isn't that in this. Mm-hmm. He isn't.
You get sprinkles of it when it needs to come out, and that's about it.
Right. He is still whip cracking with the jokes and stuff like that, and he is funny.
He's plopped in the situation.
Right.
You know?
But this time he's not the funny best friend dulling out advice. Right. He's the main
responsible
lead.
Straight man.
He's the main lead. Right. He's a straight lead. Man who doesn't. He's not the wild card. He's not the get out. You know, little.
That's the Cena for sure.
Yeah. So, no Cena. In this is like nothing like you've seen Cena before. Like,
so good.
Not saying it's as good as his Peacemaker.
I love it.
But like, it's a lot of fun.
To me, it's better.
So essentially, a couple goes on vacation to Mexico, to a resort.
And unfortunately, I didn't recognize the two female leads either. I'm sure they're established actresses, but I don't recall them, you know, from other things before. So I don't know why, but they were fantastic. They both were great.
No, I mean, because I know you watched Insecure on HBO, right? Yvonne Orji?
I never did. No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I most know her from. But she was also in some other movies like Night School and stuff like that in the comedy. Meredith Hagner, for the most part, she is HBO's Search Party is what she's probably like most known for. And she's mainly like a voice actress from what I can tell. So,
okay.
But anyway, so it's about a couple going down to Mexico, you know, big plans on a proposal happening and stuff like that. Shit goes awry. Everything's awful until these two hapless morons show up and are like, oh, you can stay with us in the presidential suite. And it's John Cena and his longtime girlfriend. And they are absolute maniacs.
Big time.
But what they do is
and which could get to the degree of annoyance.
Right.
But for me, for some reason, I still enjoyed it.
It walked a fine line.
It did walk the fine line, which is hard to do. And that, you know, we'll get into that a little bit later. But for some reason,
do you think it also helped?
It worked for me.
Like the main characters, the main character, like Little Rel Howery,
called it out all the time.
Was calling out how annoying.
I think so.
Like just letting it go. It's like it's a vacation. It's fun
because he's coaching himself. So right. you're almost like subconsciously coaching your own self to power through as well.
Right, exactly.
But you're enjoying it. You're going with the flow because it is. It's a beautiful location. It looks like they're in Hawaii or whatever. And you're having a good time. And plus, there's not that many comedies out right now. So
there's not.
There's another aspect of that where like I was just in my zone with this movie.
This comedy tickled me, right? I mean, like it tickled me
in all the right places.
It made me laugh, but I do think it was a little over the top at times. I do think it went probably a little bit too far into some of its jokes, right? Like
some storyline choices where certain characters didn't quite
I do think John Cena does wear on you after a while watching it. Like
in some parts,
you do get
to
a point where you're just like, I mean, I've had a little bit enough of the scene. I wish we would ground this character a little bit more. And they attempt to towards the later ends of the film to like give you a real reason for why he is the way he is, why he's in love with Little Rel Howery's, character and stuff like that, what draws him in, what keeps him coming around,
not too
stuff
much
like that. Oh, of course they do. The Rel Howery was Charlie. He says he's exactly like Charlie, his friend who he lost in the war.
Jay, he has
PTSD.
I know. All right. Go ahead. That was one of my drawbacks of this movie was like I didn't
was that
buy
they tried
that.
To ground it?
No, I didn't buy that. Excuse.
No, I 100% did. It wasn't all the time. It wasn't all the time, but
no, I know, I know.
I think the scene that like really got me cracking up though was just them dropping mushrooms. them eating mushrooms and having their romp through the woods and stuff like that. There's many like shocking moments, but
it was funny.
There was plenty of times where it was also like, where it was also just too much at a time.
I hear you.
I think of the scene where he loses the wedding rings, right, and like all this stuff
that pissed me off. That was
out of left field.
It was too much. It didn't make sense for the character either, because the character was poised before that to be this exceptional wonder kid, you know, fucking Green Ranger, whatever the fuck he is. But I still
love that entire scene is sparked by the fact that John Cena has a superpower where he immediately knows when, by looking at a bird, when it's going to shit.
I know that was funny. That's a good throw in.
But
it's a good throw in.
That bird's gonna shit. And I was like, it's the only reason that scene could exist is because they added that to the beginning of it, and it was that bird shitting, which started the chain of events.
It's one of those things where like, oh, that's annoying, but at the same time, it's like, well, I get why
they justified
he did it. I get why he did it.
They
yeah,
justified it.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. They cover their tracks well enough, you know, but again, like I said, this movie somehow worked for me, and I really enjoyed it. It's a solid B for me, and I'm very happy.
Yeah,
very happy that they're having a sequel.
I'm right there with you. I'm a B on this.
I mean, like, a solid B.
Hulu has announced that they will be making a sequel to Vacation Friends.
Yeah.
Which is nice. It's nice to hear. I do want to see more
good
of
good for
this.
These actors. I'm happy for that.
I also like the idea that, like, you know, it's about like, and I think we've all had these friends, like where we have a moment in time, like let's not say vacation, let's say like party friends, right? Like you go to a party, you don't really know a lot of people,
well,
but you start talking
happy you brought this up.
One or two people that like they get you at that time, but then like later on, like you talk to people, it's like, no, I hung out with like, you know, Jay and Rachel that night, right? Like I'm just using you two as an example. Jay's not dating Rachel anymore, but two names that popped in my head because I was looking at Jay and I was like, quick, attach Jay to something. That was the quickest thing I could think of. But and then everyone's like, oh, those two?
Right.
It's like, you know, like they're fucking weird, right? They have a sex dungeon in their basement and stuff like that.
Yeah, we would. Yeah.
Right. right. And like everyone starts telling you things about them. And it's like, oh, I was just having a good time and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Now imagine if that, or to bring it to Fight Club, that single serving friend.
Correct.
Is now in your life all the time.
Right.
I like that idea. I like where they went with this, with that idea that like you meet friends on vacation, you're supposed to be vacation friends.
I'm surprised you don't see it more often.
Yeah.
And maybe this might hopefully.
Well, Trains, Planes, and Automobiles, right?
That was in the 80s.
I understand, but I'm just
fucking
saying.
Fucking 80s.
Just saying.
We haven't seen
similar
many movies like this at all.
Similar situation. Although, Trains, Planes, Automobiles, that's an A movie. You know what I mean? That's a fantastic movie.
But
it's not quite this.
But again, I think, you know, everybody can relate with having situations like this where
situational situations.
Yes.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Because sometimes you go into these heightened situations sometimes where you do become super close and you have a great time with a stranger / an acquaintance who you never see again, you know? Nor do you feel comfortable or want to. Even though you do feel very connected, the fear,
little
the excitement,
J,
but also the fear
little
of
little J for me.
On.
Plenty of times where I'm like, I like this dude. We're bonding. I like this. I can hang out with this dude more. Wow. I don't want to hang out with this dude as much as I. You know what I mean? Like
it's a strong.
It's a give and take.
It's a strong choice to make.
At that moment, you both have a give and take, but it doesn't always last.
Well, yeah. The problem is, like, we have two massive egos and alphas with strong opinions about similar topics.
Who, me and Alpha?
You're going to be fucking crashing into each other.
I am far from an alpha, my friend. I am the most self-loathing individual you will ever meet in your entire life.
In an alpha way.
So, I mean, but Vacation Friends, if you slept on it, it is on Hulu, and me and Jay are both... We're recommending it for
Well,
you.
Let's throw this out there. Hulu slipped in Palm Springs, right? Palm Springs was a way better film, I think.
For sure, yeah.
Now,
Something in but, like a college kid who's drunk again, and forgot to put on a condom.
If you guys haven't seen Palm Springs, or you slept on Palm Springs and you caught out there and was like, holy shit, I slept on this. What the fuck? This is kind of in that same camp. You're probably going to stumble into this movie.
This is the most long-winded way of saying, like, check it out.
Yeah, pretty much. Sorry.
Check it out.
Again, now I'm the fucking Dave right now.
Yeah.
Meandering on
padding,
with this episode.
Padding the show out.
Yeah.
Just padding it out.
Pad it on a tush.
Stay on target. Stay on target.
So I don't just want to end things on this review, Jay.
No, bye. Boop. Just cut it.
I can't because we did get two voicemails.
He needs to get to that 90-minute mark.
But we did get two voicemails, and I'm not going to – we're not doing a movie fact this week because we didn't get any new facts this week. But you can reach out to us, and you can leave us a movie fact. Me and Jay love movie facts. We love discussing them on the show. And you can do that by reaching out to us on our hotline. That's 267-590-9042. That's 267-590-9042. Just like these two listeners did. So, Jay, here is the first voicemail that we got this week.
Pitter patter, Ten Ply.
I'm pretty sure that's Chris Braden from I Like to Like Things podcast.
What up, Chris?
Pitter patter. That's from Letterkenny, which if Jay hasn't watched Letterkenny, he needs to.
I've seen bits.
You need to watch it, Jay. And then here's the other one. This one creeps me out. Not going to lie.
Scott.
That's it.
Whoa.
Right?
That's like right from a horror movie or something. Or like a David Fincher mystery thriller.
I listened to this like several times trying to figure out what that person's saying. I have no clue. It might be a butt dial. I'm not sure. But
it's amazing, though.
Like, if you ever watch like Ghost Adventures or like Ghost Hunters and stuff, like those stupid reality ghost shows where like they hear something in the white noise and are oh, did you hear what he said? Uh-huh. And it's like, what'd he say? And
I don't have ears for that, though.
And then that's all you hear is what? No, but once they tell you what that word was,
right, then you
that's
can hear
all
it.
That's all yeah. you hear them saying. Like, did you hear it? That ghost just said Bart Simpson. And then everyone's like, oh my God, he totally did say Bart Simpson. Why would he say Bart Simpson? That makes no logical sense. But anyway, so I just like that we got a butt dial.
It is amazing.
So that's going to do it for our show this week. If you would like to discuss anything that we talked about on the show, you can reach out to us on our social media. You can reach me on Twitter, @SuperMoviePod. You can reach me on my Instagram, SMBDave on there. Jay, where can everyone find you?
I am on
not the Facebook anymore because you deleted that shit.
No, not there. But
listen
also
to a Patreon episode to find out why it's gone.
Yes. Twitter, J_SMB, and also on Instagram, Super Movie Bros.
And then, of course, if you would like to catch all that Patreon pre-roll content, hear how I almost died this week, or hear why Jay shut down the Facebook for this for Super Movie Bros, head over to patreon.com/SuperMovieBrosPodcast. There you'll get, for $1 a month, you
at
will
least
get
$1 a month.
All please. The additional content that is available over there. I think it's 39 episodes. I have like 18 like ooh, saved yeah. up that I need to just drop. I'll just do like a massive just Patreon.
There's at least 15 soon. Savory ones.
I know. Yeah, I'll just drop all 15 like in one massive dump pretty soon. And then, of course, we are part of a network. We are part of the Age of Radio Podcasting Network. Head over to ageofradio.org. There you can check out all the great shows that are part of the Age of Radio Podcasting Network. And you can check out Super Movie Bros page on there. And there you'll get a media player that will let you binge Super Movie Bros. So I want to thank all of you for listening. Have a great one. Cheers.